This week on the Fifth Trooper podcast.
You can tell us how terrible we are too.
Yeah, you can do. Yeah, you know what?
If you want to some conflict.
Yeah, if you want to subscribe to our YouTube channel and then tell us how terrible we are, that's fine as long as you subscribe.
Welcome to the Fifth Trooper podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Fifth Trooper podcast. In this series, we're talking Star Wars Legion. My name is Jay Shalansky, and this is my good friend and Hutt love slave, Nick Allen.
Hey, hey.
On today's podcast, we're interviewing Kyle Dornbos of Never Tell Me the Odds website. That's swlegionodds.com. So first up, we just want to mention the giveaway again. We are giving away a unit of Rebel Commandos, completely unopened, I swear. I didn't touch them. I didn't look at the cards. I just left them completely closed. And in order to do that, visit us on podcast.thefifthtrooper.com. Up at the top, you'll see a little link for giveaway. And I know it's a little bit of a pain in the butt, but we are asking for likes and for you to love us across all platforms and rate us, tell us how wonderful we are, because we could use the boost, man. We're here alone.
You can tell us how terrible we are, too.
Yeah, you could do. Yeah, you know what?
If you want some conflict.
Yeah, if you want to subscribe to our YouTube channel and then tell us how terrible we are, that's fine as long as you subscribe. I'm completely fine with that.
And you still get the commandos.
That's right. Yeah, you'll still have a chance. I don't care how nasty you are. I'll still give them to you. So go ahead, check that out. And that would be cool. And you could win something potentially. All right. So first up, we are talking about...
We're doing it wrong.
Hey, everybody. We do things wrong, more than we like to admit, but we figured we'll do it wrong on here and we'll tell you about it. And then I'm sure they're going to write it on our tombstones about how wrong we were. So first up, this actually came up last night in free play while we were playing. The question was basically, if I have a unit on standby and there's another unit within my range for the standby and they attack, but if they split their attack, so let's say I had stormtroopers and I split my normal stormtroopers with my white dice and my DLT-19 with my red dice to two different units, does the standby enact after the first attack pool or after the full attack? And so the answer is after the full attack. So even though the attack pool was split, it's still considered one action of attack. Not to confuse that with if you were outside the range of someone who was in standby and then you moved within range, you completed your action by moving in range. So that was the question, and that's the answer.
And it also begs the question, what's the incentive of actually putting a standby token if you know you're going to be attacked?
Yeah.
Like, it seems best for a standby token to be used if you think somebody's, to keep someone from moving in on you.
Yeah.
Because the problem is that if you do a standby attack expecting to be attacked, that means that you're going to reduce your own dice pool for the attack back because they're going to probably hit you with a few things.
Well, and it seems to me in that scenario, too, you can't move or attack to go into the standby, so why would that ever come up? Because when you attack, if they're within your standby range, then they're within your shooting range.
Exactly. The only upside I see is that you're forcing that unit to activate first, and there could be situations where that is effective because you're going to use that unit. You're probably going to put an order token on to make sure you use that unit first before you try and move anybody else in.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's a wait and see approach. You're right.
It's very situational.
Yeah.
But it could come up.
Because you're like, are they... Well, right. Maybe in your head you don't think they're going to attack, or, you know, maybe you think they're going to move. And
more like another unit
you
know wants to move into that space.
Yeah.
And so you want to force them to do something. I'm not exactly sure what that something is, and force them in a situation where they want to have to attack with those units first to activate the standby token or to reduce the effectiveness of the standby token when they move that other unit in.
Yeah, and I absolutely. And I think it was just an interesting question, and something I've never run into that situation. So I was like, you know what, we'll bring it up and we'll, you know, let everybody know. So the next thing we're going to be talking about is it's not really a what we're doing wrong, but it's just some questions that came up. And so this is split between what's the difference between Luke's charge, Vader's relentless, and the Snowtrooper's steady. Now, you know, as some people who only play one of the lists and don't, you know what the other lists do, but don't really understand them. So basically what it is all three of these are a move and then attack, a free attack of some sort. Luke's is a move and then a melee attack. Vader's is a move and then whatever he wants attack. And then the Snowtrooper's steady is a move and range attack. And so we just wanted to bring this up because I think it's interesting to just keep these in mind. I mean, sometimes when I'm playing Luke, I forget he has charge, like, to be honest with you, because it's just, I don't know why, I just forget about it. And I didn't realize for a little while that it was only a melee, because he does have that gun too. So that's just something, you know, I wanted to point out.
Yeah, I had to keep referencing the card over and over again just to double check. It's like, no, you can't do a ranged attack, as nice as that would be. The steady I did not realize was only ranged.
Yeah.
I don't know why that would ever really come up, because it is ranged. It's like, if you can ranged, why would you want to move up and do a melee anyway?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it would depend on if you had the flame. Well, I don't know why you would have the snowtroopers without the flame trooper, but in case you did, because the snowtroopers get better dice. They get the black dice on melee versus
snowtroopers roll white dice.
Right? Yeah. So that would be the reason. But, you know, and it's just bringing up. And then Vader, of course, because he's Vader, you toss that saber throw on him. He can do whatever he wants. So we just wanted to bring those up. Those are the three differences. They're not equal. They're all different. And just one of those reminders that we wanted to keep up on there. Nick, is there anything you've seen lately that you want to talk about, or something you just learned at all?
I don't like Han. It's the one thing. like he's good. I played a list where I was playing Luke and Han.
Yeah.
Two strike units. And I don't like having both. Han is... I like Han. He's really great if you catch units out in the open, but like, only throwing two dice and having only sharpshooter one makes it so that you're really only throwing one dice.
Yeah.
In a lot of situations. So I didn't really like that. I feel like Luke has just more of an effect. Like, he's just more versatile. And that's, if you haven't learned this from me talking earlier, I like versatile units over just things that do specific things. Like, Han feels like something, he does a specific thing. He just gets in there and he tries to pick guys off. And Luke is very versatile with his melee versus he has the range attack, so you don't have to put lightsaber throw on it. In fact, you shouldn't put lightsaber throw on him. And his jump makes it so he moves around. Like, he just does a lot. And Han, I feel like, just doesn't do a lot. He does one thing, which is try and kill things very effectively.
Well, and I think this is something you've talked about before as yourself as a player. Like, for a while, you were maybe too aggressive with the Rebels. And that's what Han plays as. From what I've seen, and once again, I play Imperial, so it's just what I've played against. He just seems too aggressive for
what you want to do.
Yeah, for the Rebels. And I think what I've seen of Leia is what the Rebels need is a support unit that helps them out, that gets, you know, that keeps them going, versus someone, I mean, you know, once again, Fantasy Flight really built these all so they're two character, right? And Han is, he's just going to go out and do whatever he wants, and that's how the mini plays.
It feels very much like you put Leia in so she can support the troops to allow Luke to go do whatever he wants. It's probably the same way if you play Han and Leia. It's like, Leia stays back so she can make sure the troops are as effective as they can be. Well, Han goes and does whatever he wants.
Right. Yeah, and it's looking, and you know, just looking ahead a little bit to some of the previews we've seen, but it looks like, I feel like that's going to be kind of the MO of these co-commander type things is it feels like Han and Luke are too aggressive units. And then it feels like right now, you know, Vader's aggressive, Veers is support. And, you know, as we go, I think that's how, if you're going to play two commanders, that's how you want to do it. You want an aggressive and a support, unless you have other support units. But right now, I don't see that as an option. So you need one aggressive, one support. Like, I don't know, and looking ahead this week, actually, Boba Fett comes out. And so it'd be interesting to see, because Boba Fett's a little aggressive as well, how he plays with Vader. I got a feeling it's not going to be... They're not going to be very copacetic. I think you're going to have, you know, Veers and Boba Fett, or Veers and Vader.
Well, really what it breaks down to is this entire game is about troops.
Yeah.
Like, and you want somebody in there who can support your troops, because like half the objectives, maybe more than half the objectives, require a troop to do something.
Yep.
And so someone like Leia just supports what you want to be doing in the game in general. And like the way I play Luke is he's a troop who can just do whatever he wants. He just makes chaos.
Yeah. And I think it works good. But like you said, I don't think you can have both him and Han. It just didn't seem to work from what I've seen.
No, like they did stuff.
Yeah.
But it just didn't feel cohesive.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Okay. So we are going to move on. I'm really excited about this next segment. We interviewed Kyle Dornbos from Never Tell Me the Odds. If you guys have listened to the podcast at all, you know I quote that site all the time. I think the numbers that he does are fantastic. I think the tools he provides are fantastic. And so, you know, we asked him onto the podcast. And here's our pre-recorded interview with Kyle. So we're really excited today to have Kyle from Never Tell Me the Odds blog. You can find that at swlegionodds.com. Kyle, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure to talk some Legion.
So before we get to your blog and everything, I'd really like to talk about, I know you've probably posted this on your site already, but what is the list you're currently running right now for Legion?
Sure. So my current favorite list, and the one that I brought to Nova, was just a pretty like boilerplate Wonder Twins list. Luke, Leia, one unit of fleets, four Z6s, and a couple AT-RTs. I like to run the AT-RTs with laser cannons just because I feel like that's the most logical place for rebels to get impact.
Yeah, so I saw the layout at Legion as far as Empire versus Rebels. Did you feel like you had an advantage at all playing a Rebels list versus so many Empire lists?
Actually, the hot thing to do for Empire at Nova was triple bikes with troopers. So I only encountered one AT-ST. But AT-RT lasers, I feel like, are one of those things where if you show up and your opponent doesn't have an AT-ST or any armor, you know, you're still okay. But if you show up and they do bring an AT-ST, then you're really glad you brought them. I don't feel like they're ever, you know, wasted points.
Yeah, right. I think no matter what, they still have a value to them.
Right. And they are very good in, at least until the FD turrets come out, against a mirror match with Rebels, because right now Rebels are pretty much guaranteed to bring their own AT-RTs and laser cannons. Obviously, if your opponent didn't also bring laser cannons, they'll just tear up your opponent's AT-RTs.
Yeah, so speaking of Nova, you actually had a bunch of great write-ups on your website about Nova that we actually borrowed for our site. Now, I believe it was day two that you came in second place, is that right?
Yeah, that was day two, Friday.
So other than, you know, what you wrote on your blog, was there anything at Nova that you saw as far as tactics or with your opponents that seemed crazy or interesting for you?
No, there wasn't really anything totally unexpected. It seemed like the most effective list was that Veers triple bikes. All but one of the undefeated Imperialists that came out of Nova were basically that build.
Yeah, right.
And then unfortunately for Rebels, because I think primarily because of how bad the T-47 is, and obviously Commandos and Han weren't legal yet, they were pretty much all the same. Wonder Twins, a bunch of Z6s, some fleets, and, you know, two ATRTs.
Yeah, so to go back to that a little bit, we talk about the T-47 and how bad it is a lot on the podcast. So I know you just wrote an article about this on your blog. So I guess my question would be, how do you, besides it being just bad, don't use it? If someone wanted to use it, do you have any recommendations on how to play it or how you could use it?
I mean, the primary problem with it is just that for 170 points, it's really fragile, and it actually doesn't even do that much damage, at least not as much as you would want for something that, you know, is so fragile and so expensive. I think if you do want to use it, this is going to sound weird, but you probably want to just double down and take two of them in a list with Leia. Because, you know, most people bring enough impact to handle one T-47 pretty easily, but maybe they didn't bring enough to handle two.
Yeah.
And if you run them together, you can focus down targets a little more easily. One of them's probably still going to get blown up, but I still don't think it's a very efficient unit. But if you're a masochist and you want to run it, I think the way to do it is just to run two and then drop Luke from your list, because you're going to need, you know, in a list with 275 point units, you're going to need to fill out as much of the rest of the space with troopers as you can. So,
well, yeah. And you know what? It seems odd to me because the game is so well rounded and well balanced that it doesn't make sense to have a unit in here that plays like this, that isn't as good. So I wonder, you know, from your thoughts, like why do you think Fantasy Flight would even have a unit like this that seems so outmatched as far as everything else is concerned? You know what I mean?
Well, I think probably, you know, we've been told that when they play tested all of the units that are currently out, they play tested them with basically stuff we still haven't seen yet. So it's possible that something comes out, or the, you know, the meta shifts where it becomes more useful. Like, for example, you know, when Palpatine comes out and the Royal Guard come out, I could see Imperial players replacing, you know, obviously Vader or Veers with Palpatine, and then maybe some Royal Guard. And then if you're doing that, you're dropping what would be Empire's traditional sources of impact. So DLTs and AT-ST, Vader, Saber Throw. And then possibly, you know, T-47 has less counters on the other side with a list like that. So that's slightly speculative to say that, you know, we're currently playing in an environment where the game is not complete to the extent that they play tested all the original stuff. But I do think, too, it seems like they did such a good job balancing all of the other units. I feel like maybe they just missed a little bit with the T-47. I mean, you have, I don't know exactly how their point cost formulas work, but you have a lot of abilities on the T-47 that just don't get used or almost never get used. So, for example, like the Cover 1 is almost entirely redundant with its armor ability, unless you're getting shot by something that has a low dice count and high impact, like an ATRT laser or saber throw. With that Cover 1, you're usually just, you know, canceling a hit that would be canceled by armor anyway. And then the other one is, obviously, it's Arsenal 2 keyword. It's really difficult to set up a rear shot.
Yeah.
And if you're doing that, you want to be, you pretty much have to be like in the middle of your opponent's force, which is, you know, the last place you want a unit, 175 point unit that has 7 hit points.
Yeah, and like we said, because everything seems so well balanced in this game, for them to have a unit like this that seems so outmatched, it just seems like a really weird miss for Fantasy Flight on this, especially with how the rest of the game is.
And, you know, a lot of these units, too, are terrain dependent. Like, part of what a really annoying thing about the T-47 that also makes it difficult to use is the base is so large and it has a compulsory move. So you're likely to have situations where you're forced to do a compulsory move and end on like a barricade or something, you know. And luckily they did like an FAQ where they basically said as long as your unit is at a 45 degree angle or less, you're okay. But like the original rules as written was that you would have to stop that T-47 short of that barricade and take damage.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Which is really odd for a unit that flies. So, you know, just because of the limitations of, the abstraction of playing on a table with miniatures. You have a unit that flies that gets stuck on, you know, ground level terrain pieces, essentially.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about this the other day, and I think it's, you know, with terrain specifically, I don't know that they, even though they built in some stuff into the rules for terrain, and I don't know if they were really ready for all of the different terrain types that players would want to be using and the different stuff, you know, we'd be seeing on the table. So I wonder if, you know, maybe there is an update coming for terrain rules that kind of, you know, maybe covers some of this nuanced stuff that we're now starting to see as we play tournaments and we play the game more.
Yeah, and I think if you compare Legion to a game like 40K in 8th edition, which I've also played, the cover rules just seem unnecessarily complex to me. Like the 40K cover rules basically for infantry are, you have cover if A, you're physically standing on a terrain piece, or B, you know, immediately behind a linear terrain piece like a barricade. Those are the only two rules for infantry. So it's really easy. Either you're standing on terrain or you're not, or you're immediately behind a barricade or you're not. You know, they don't have all this, like, draw a line, you know, check
right.
obscurity, yeah. Half minis thing. It's just, you know, it's very simple. You can look at a unit immediately and know whether it's in cover. And I think part of that, too, is essentially designing terrain to fit the rules of the game. Like, if you were to play on a 40K board, you know, you'd notice that everything has, even things like boxes, are on a scenic base so that you can place minis on that base. And then, you know, if those minis are standing on that base, they get that terrain benefit.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think you'll see Legion move in that direction, hopefully. You know, as people get more experienced and the terrain gets a little more standardized.
Yeah, and I think that as we move forward, like they've been updating stuff on the community portal, and you know, they updated the rules reference. So I think as this continues moving on, we'll definitely get clarity out of a lot of these nuanced things that we're now looking at.
And it has definitely evolved, I think, in a good way. You know, things like them clarifying that, yes, if your unit is on top of a building, even if that building is flat and you can see most of it, technically they do still get cover if they're being shot from below. You know, that's always been sort of a logical conclusion of how they wrote the terrain rules, but it's nice to see them actually just clarify that specific point. So you don't have to spend 10 minutes in the middle of a match, you know, explaining to your opponent why your unit that they can mostly see still has cover.
Yeah, you know, and I think we can all agree on most of that. You know, the tournaments I've been playing in, I haven't run into anybody that, you know, has a huge disagreement about terrain. I think we're all kind of on the same page with all of that.
Yeah, it's mostly just when you're teaching the game and you're like, well, it's really a four-step process. You know, before the game, you check to see if 50% of the model's covered. But then during the game, when you're shooting at it, it's if any part of the model's covered, and then that terrain has to have covered 50% of the model before the game. And it's like,
yeah, yeah.
If you're new, you're like, what?
Yeah. So besides Nova, I know you've also been playing in the Invader League as Orgamatis. And if anyone who doesn't know what that is, Invader League is Legion on Tabletop Simulator, which is on Steam. It's basically like a patch for Tabletop Simulator. How's that been going for you?
Pretty good. I've gotten two games in so far. So the format of Invader League is they do a they call it a round robin, but it's you basically play in a like a division of you and four other players, and then you play each of those other players once, so you play four games. And then the top two players from each division move on to like a single elimination style bracket. And each of those time periods is roughly a month. So the round robin will run until, I think, October 6th. And then after that, they'll sort out who the top two players are in each division. And then those will move on to like a single elimination bracket. So there's actually, I don't know the total player count, but I think there's 10 or 11 different groups. So what is that, like 60 players?
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that, how they're doing that. You know, I know it's tough right now at bigger tournaments. We saw this problem at Nova with, you know, three unbeaten players because of strength of schedule. So I really like how they're doing that with the Invader League, with the round robin idea. I think that's just a really much better way to do it. And, you know, I realize you can't do that in tournaments right now, but it just seems to work so well, and it really gives you some true, you know, winners, I think.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you have to play more games. It's going to end up being like 8 or 9 games over a course of 2 months. But yeah, I think especially if you're dealing with like a tournament with 60 players, you need a system like that to really whittle it down. So I've played 2 games on back-to-back days last night and then a Sunday night, and I did pretty well. Currently I'm 2-0 and I have 2 more games to play in the next 3 days. I'm going to be traveling for the last 2 weeks of the season, so I'm trying to like cram all my games in at once.
Yeah. I actually, you know, I caught the game last night and, it was really good, man. You know, I like the feeds on Twitch. I also like the idea, you know, with everybody trying to go to these digital games and e-tournaments. I think that this might be really, really good for Legion, and I think it could help, you know, help us maintain the player base and continue getting people to join.
Yeah, that's one of the really neat things about Invader League, is because it is on Tabletop Simulator Online, you can actually stream it. And you know, they have commentators. Talk Polite is the sort of the guy that runs the league, and then there are several other streamers, including Endless from Yavin Base, and then I think Stabcast is also doing a stream. So at any given time, you know, depending on like time zone, you could have like 4 different Invader League matches being streamed at once, which I think is pretty cool. I think it's a good sign for the game of Legion that it's interesting enough that people want to actually spend 2 hours of their time to watch somebody play with miniatures.
Well, yeah, and I think too with this, I wonder if it might help people get into the game as far as getting over that initial hurdle of, you know, painting and gluing together minis, that this might be a way that someone can play the game, try it out, fall in love with it, you know, and then to think to themselves, hey, you know what, I the minis part doesn't seem that bad. I love this game enough that I, you know, I'm willing to do that as well so that I can play.
Right. And actually that's precisely what I did. Before the game was released in March, they had it, on Tabletop Simulator. And, the creator, by the way, of the Tabletop Simulator is named Tieran, of the mod for Legion. And it's a really good mod. It's actually the best one that I've seen on tabletop. But yeah, I played it before I bought the core set just to see what it was like, because as I said, I'm a recovering 40K player. So, I'm like, is this going to be good enough to peel me away from 40K? And I was blown away by the mechanics. You know, and obviously I went all in, after that, but yeah, I tried it on TTS first. And the neat thing too about Invader League is they use, everything that's been spoiled, not just what's been released. So, you know, that's why if you turn on Invader League, you'll see a match with like FD turrets and Boba Fett and, you know, potentially, I haven't actually seen Palpatine yet, but technically he is legal for Invader League. So,
yeah, well, I think I saw last night you played against the turrets, correct?
Yeah, and I used 2 myself. I still can't decide whether I like something that can't move.
Yeah, but, that's tough.
They do have a lot of firepower for 70 points, and their range is really good. You know, for Rebels especially, you don't really have anything that's range 4 except for the laser. So it's kind of weird to like actually be able to shoot something that's range 4 away. I know that, you know, Imperial players are used to that, but
yeah, well, and I think once they become legal, the really interesting part is going to be, I can't remember the one condition, but because they're treated as troop units, you'll be able to drop them with that condition card around round 2. And I think that's going to make that really interesting for them.
Yeah, rapid reinforcements.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep.
And then the other one that's really good for them too is that advanced positions deployment, because it specifically says, you know, trooper units lose the stationary keyword and gain scout 1, which means that you can actually move up your FDs before the game starts, and they have an enormous base, so it's a lot farther than you would think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think there's a lot of interesting things that can be done with that. So to go back a little bit, you know, you said you played 40K, and you were playing on the TTS mod for Legion. Is that, you know, what made you decide that you wanted to start this site for Legion?
It was actually, I distinctly remember it was a discussion regarding Fleet Troopers on the forums. I had been kind of doing this sort of analysis just for my own purposes, with the dice simulator and stuff. And people were talking about the merits of the scattergun versus the barrage MPL.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you know, the MPL is good. It's better against troopers and heavy cover. And then if you're shooting at stuff in the open, then you want the scattergun because it's cheaper. And I had actually run the numbers, and I'm like, well, hang on. You know, that's just because it has blast doesn't mean necessarily that it's actually better against troopers and cover than the scattergun. And as it turns out, it's not, at least against stormtroopers. You'll actually do more damage, you know, with the scattergun because of its pierce, firing at stormtroopers in heavy cover than you will with the thing that ignores the heavy cover in the MPL. So it was that discussion, I think, like on the forums. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, there's, at least as far as I could tell, there wasn't anyone else doing like a similar, you know, taking things all the way through to wounds analysis, including cover and pierce and all that. And I had already sort of constructed that dice simulator to do that. So I'm like, well, why don't I just see if I can start writing about this?
Yeah. And speaking of that die simulator, you were just talking about, you know, for everyone listening, Kyle makes that available for you for free. I highly, highly recommend you go to his site and download it. It is a very, very valuable tool. So what made you decide that you would make that tool free for everybody and give everyone access to it?
I had been asked after I started my site, people were asking me questions to like run probability numbers and stuff. And I'm like, well, why don't I just make this available? And if people want to use it, they can do it. There's, you know, it's not like proprietary or anything. It's just, it takes the dice rolls and essentially what it does is you input the dice you want, the conditions you want, including cover, Pierce, Guardian, all that. And then it'll roll them 25,000 times and then spit out like a report for you to tell you essentially what the results were.
I would recommend to anyone out there, go right now to Kyle's site and get that.
Unfortunately, it does take about 2 minutes because it's not super optimized. I use scripts. And I probably could work on my my Visual Basic a little bit to make it a little faster. I do have like a batch version where I can run like 20 different scenarios at once from articles. But so that is the downside, is you got to, you know, once you hit like generate results, you got to wait about 2 minutes. It's not like an instantaneous thing.
Yeah, so for everyone that's listening, it's an Excel spreadsheet that I'm assuming is running macros in the background.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. So my next question is, you know, since you've been doing this site with all the numbers and formulas and probabilities, how has this changed the way you play or view Legion? Or, well, you know what? I guess a better question would, how has your play progressed since you've been running the probabilities and the numbers and all these formulas and looking at Legion this new way with your blog?
I think one of the things I was really impressed that I was finding when I was running this stuff and doing like the efficiency analysis for Legion is, with the unfortunate exception, as we already spoke about, of the T-47, everything is pretty well balanced. Like the stuff that is more efficient, like Fleet Troopers, which you mentioned in your last episode is, you know, the most efficient way to kill other troopers. It's on a fragile platform. You know, they have a white defense die and they're short ranged. So even though it's the most efficient unit for killing other troopers, it has other drawbacks with the short range and the, you know, the fragile platform for the cost that you're paying. So it's not like if you do the same sort of analysis for 40K, unfortunately, you know, it's hard to balance a game with 400 units in it, but there are clearly some units that are just like objectively worse than others. I have not reached that conclusion so far with any of the units in Legion. So it's mostly a like know what you're paying for kind of analysis rather than just straight up use this weapon instead of this one. You know, for example, like the MPL versus the scattergun, the whole point of demonstrating that the scattergun is better as versus troopers is to sort of discover what is it exactly that you're paying 10 more points for with the MPL, and it's that impact too.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not that the MPL is like objectively worse than the scattergun. It's just, you know, you have to know that when you're paying 10 more points for it, the thing that you're getting is not, you know, better damage against units and cover, it's impact too.
Well, yeah. And I think too, something we've been talking about for a while is value, you know, and for instance, with Vader, I think the points were really tough for people to get into to put him in the army, especially with Veers. But now as I think we play longer and we have a better understanding of the game and of strategy, I think, you know, and I'm sure you have numbers on this, but I think Vader brings a much larger value to the table now in comparison with some other commanders. And also, you know, besides value, you know, I think he just has a presence about him that really can affect the game and affect how other players view him.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got a fairly large don't come here
yeah.
area.
He does.
Which also means he's somewhat objective dependent. You know, if you're playing a Vader list, you don't want to pick recover the supplies. If you can manage it, you want to pick something where you're forcing your opponent to fight over a small area. It's funny you mentioned Vader. He's actually hopefully going to be the next unit article out. I actually had a friend of mine work on the article who's his name is Mike Berry, but he's an excellent Vader player. And I'm obviously a Rebel player, so I'm like, hey, you know, you certainly know a lot more about this than I do. So look for that sometime in the next week or so, or this, it actually might be out by the time this airs. But yeah, and I think too, with Vader, that goes back to the, you know, when they play tested stuff, they play tested it with more than we're currently aware of or is released. Because I think you could see, especially once Royal Guard come out, it'll be an excellent complement to Vader for a variety of reasons. And you're actually seeing this right now in Vader League too. So
yeah. And I mean, I love Vader and I've been playing him for a while and I'm really looking forward to the Royal Guards. But, you know, right now I play him with snow troopers with a flame trooper and I kind of treat them almost as they're like a cohesive unit or they're all part of one unit. And I just kind of run them up all together.
Yeah, they're a great target for his 2-pip. New ways to motivate them because their close range damage is amazing. And they don't actually, you know, one of the things I talk about in all my trooper articles is damage degradation, which basically looks at, you know, how much damage output do you lose when you lose a wound? Like how much is actually backloaded to your heavy weapon choice? And snowtroopers have the most heavily backloaded damage, which basically means that if you lose a stormtrooper or a snowtrooper, you know, it's not going to affect you nearly as much as if like a fleet trooper or a rebel trooper squad loses a guy. So when you choke out that guy with new ways to motivate them to get that extra, you know, 3-4 inches of speed burst, you're not really hampering that damage that much and you're going to get them in flamethrower range.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, they're just one of those units that people target a lot. But I always feel like, you know what, I'm still good because I still have this flamethrower. So I'll be all right. And if I reach you, you know, you're going to be you're still going to be in a whole lot of trouble for sure.
Yeah, I mean, even if you just got the flamethrower and the unit leader, potentially you're rolling like 6 or 7 dice still. So,
yeah. So, you know, I think we might have talked about it a little bit here, but, you know, why don't we talk about maybe any recommendations you have for players? We could start with Rebels. So, you know, anything, any particular unit, any particular strategy or tactic, you know, anything that would be a good recommendation for a Rebel player while playing their list?
I've got two tips. I think the first is just having to do with, you know, the staple of the Rebel list, the Z6 Rebel Trooper. And this actually goes also for Imperials with DLT Stormtroopers, is one thing that I saw a lot of people doing early is to try and maximize suppression by splitting fire, you know, with their heavy weapon and then throwing the rest of the dice with something else. Which is good in that, you know, you're dealing two suppression tokens to two separate units instead of one to one unit. But there's a couple of considerations there. The first is you do, you know, have a chance to fail to actually land a hit if you're splitting fire. And if you do that, then, you know, not only have you reduced your damage against the target that you actually want to damage, but you've only still handed out one suppression token. So, like, for example, you know, the Z6 has a roughly 18% chance to completely whiff. So if you're splitting fire, you know, you've got a 1 in 5 chance roughly of missing out on your second suppression token. And if you're splitting fire against units in cover, since cover is a static benefit, you know, if both of your targets are in cover, you're effectively doubling their cover bonus by splitting fire. So, unless I'm shooting at two targets in the open, or, you know, both of your targets are out of command range and vulnerable to panic, I generally try and focus units down by throwing all my dice at one target with my Z6 squads. You know, most of the time, if your opponent's any good, your targets are going to be in cover, and you're going to push a lot more hits through that way.
Yeah, that's really a good idea.
The second tip I have for Rebels is just having to do with Luke and the use of Luke. Any unit, and actually this goes for all units that have Pierce, but especially for lightsaber units, he's going to be most efficient when you're hitting things that do not have Pierce immunity. So I know that sounds like an obvious conclusion, but I did this too with Luke when I first started, and I see people doing this a lot, is if your opponent has Vader or another Luke, you just try and use him as a heat-seeking Son of Skywalker missile on that opposing commander.
Oh, yeah.
But you're actually... You know, you're doing roughly half as much damage to Vader or another Luke as you would be to, like, a trooper unit or really any other target that doesn't have Pierce immunity. Whereas, you know, if you're shooting Vader or Luke with a Z6, you know, you're gonna do the same, since they don't rely on Pierce at all for their damage, just raw hits. You're gonna be doing the same amount of damage to them as you would to, like, a comparable trooper unit. So. You know, from an efficiency perspective, if you can set it up such that you can engage or whittle down your opponent's Pierce immune units with units that don't have Pierce, and then use Luke to go after Stormtroopers or whatever, you're going to get more kills and more wounds that way. Now, obviously, with, you know, if Vader gets up in your grill, you can't just totally ignore him.
Right.
And Luke is good for, especially with force push, which I think is a mandatory upgrade on him. He's good at managing Vader and getting him out of melee and back into the open where you can shoot him. He's also good at sort of trying to get Vader to spend those dodge tokens. Often what I'll do after another Vader or Luke activates, you know, and takes their force reflexes dodge, or they get a dodge token from my allies, the force or whatever, is I'll charge him with Luke, hit him with that lightsaber, hopefully get him to spend that dodge token in melee, you know, where they're not going to benefit from deflect, and then force push him back out into the open. And now they don't have a dodge token, and they're hopefully close to a unit like fleets or a couple of these six squads where you can gun them down and try and push some more wounds through. So I don't want to say, like, never use Luke against another Jedi or Sith, but, you know, if you can use push and your mobility to sort of manage Vader, it's much more efficient for him to be mulching troopers, which he's very good at. So,
yeah, and I think you're right. You know, I think I have this tendency to with Vader is, you know, you're trying to use him to take out their big, you know, their big players. And so, you know, you see Luke coming down, you're like, all right, I'm gonna run Vader right at him and take care of this problem. But you're right. It never ever works out the way you think it's going to work out, for sure.
Yeah, and Luke is, you know, he's only got 6 health. He's got a red defense die, which feels like a luxury for Rebel players. But I find that I I play him better if I pretend that he is a white surge die, just like a rebel trooper, just because, you know, you can definitely like fail several saves in a row and suddenly Luke's got two wounds left and he's out in the middle of the enemy army. So I like to try and be conservative with him. You know, when I first played, I was kind of reckless with Luke, and that just leaves him exposed. You know, I like to say if you see a pretty girl at the bar, you can't just walk up to her and take your pants off. You got to buy her a drink first.
Yeah, that's right.
So the same thing goes for Luke. You know, you might have all these tempting trooper squads in range two, but you know, which is roughly his charge range. But if you jump in there and you delete a trooper squad and you don't have a dodge token or any cover, suddenly you've got Luke standing all by himself in the middle of the opponent's army and he's going to get mowed down. So that happened to me a couple times before I started adjusting my tactics and using him a little more cautiously.
Yeah, I mean, same for me with Vader. You know, I'll have him and I'll see some low hanging fruit and I'll be like, okay, here we go. I'm going to go ahead and do this, and I'll end up taking them all out, and, you know, I'll be left just hanging in the breeze out in the open waiting for, you know, them to attack me. It's something I got to try to work on.
Yeah, with Vader especially, because he really erases things. So it's going to be more common for him to find himself after attacking something unengaged than engaged, just because whatever he has tends to die. So you really got to, you know, obviously he's slower, so you have less margin for error than with Luke, but you do really have to be careful about choosing your fights, even with Vader.
Okay, so I think you may have given us a few in there, but what kind of tips do you have for the Imperials?
Yeah, I think a couple, you know, I think both of those tips actually are in common with Imperials, you know, using Vader to try and engage troopers instead of Luke. And then not splitting fire. The DLT is actually even more vulnerable to, you know, splitting fire against troopers in cover than Z6, just because you're rolling less dice, so you have a less crit chance.
Right.
And then also, I think just as a general list building tip for Imperial players is, your units are more expensive. They're also more durable, but that means you have a little bit less room for like extra fluff in your list than a rebel player would. And they have several sort of big expensive units like Vader and an AT-ST. And I would say when you're list building, you got to pick what your expensive unit's going to be and take one of those. In other words, if you want an AT-ST, you know, grab your big, expensive, awesome AT-ST and then take Veers. Or if you want Vader, you know, grab your big, expensive, awesome Vader and then take a bunch of trooper units. I've seen players run Vader and an AT-ST in the same list, and you just don't have enough units and activations to make things happen. So I think especially with Imperial players, you got to kind of choose your anchor, like the unit that you're going to center your strategy around, and then fill out the rest with trooper units and supporting units.
Yeah, and I think for me, you know, I've been talking about for the last few podcasts, you know, from the beginning, that I've been trying to run Vader in an AT-ST, and I just could never seem to find my groove with it. So now I've been running Vader's list with Veers, with four stormtroopers and two snowtroopers, and man, that list has, I've played it twice, and it is such a really good list. And I think the troopers are really helping me, you know, anchor down Vader and keep him as the focus.
Yeah, and you probably feel like you have a lot more units to do stuff with.
Yeah, for sure. I felt way more comfortable with this list. You know, I have Vader with saber throw and force reflexes. I have two sets of snow troopers with an extra trooper and flame troopers and impact grenades. I have two sets of storm troopers with DLT 19s and grenades, two sets of storm troopers with HH-12s and grenades. And then I'm also running Veers as well with this list.
Yeah, if you have all your points tied up in two models, I think you're much more vulnerable to variants too. So I'm pretty excited for Empire 2 once they get scout troopers, just because that'll be another cheap trooper unit that they can add to a Vader list. I feel like right now you sort of, you know, for your Vader list, you take Vader, you take your six troopers, and you still got like 100 points, and you're like, man, I don't really want to buy one unit of bike.
Yep. Yeah, and I think, you know, that's why I have Veers, and, you know, I think Boba Fett, too. I mean, I don't know about Boba Fett, but when he comes out, you know, I think that that's going to be helpful, too. It'll be interesting to see how they all play, and but I think it's going to help us really round out the Empire list.
Yeah, and speaking real quick to Boba Fett, because he's been used in Invader League already, he is really good, especially since he gives you a chance to get an extra victory token, which is something that nobody else does right now.
Oh, that's interesting.
But, you know, if you are out there and you're using him, or you're thinking of you know, getting him when he comes out, whenever that is, don't be deceived by that. You know, red with surge, defense die. He's only got 5 health, so he's got a good save, but. You know, if he gets unloaded on by a couple Z6 squads, he's going to go down a lot faster than you think he should. So,
yeah, well, and I think this is even happening with Han and the Rebel Commandos right now. You know, I think we've seen a few people do this, and even my co-host Nick, you know, is that they get this new unit and they put them out there to see what they do, and then they just end up getting shredded because, you know, you weren't really thinking about tactics. You were just trying to see what the unit does. And so, but you know, I think we're all guilty of that, right? I think we're all guilty of looking at a new unit and getting really excited about it and throwing it out on the board to see what it does, and then maybe making some mistakes.
Yeah, it's funny as you mentioned the commandos, because they're, you know, nobody's surprised when like a rebel trooper dies, right? You're like, oh, okay, there goes another rebel trooper. But when your commandos die, you're like, oh, that's terrible. But they have the exact same durability as a rebel trooper, and they're 50% more expensive. So,
right.
You know, you really have to be cagey with them. I think my go-to use of the commandos is probably going to be sniper teams, just because, you know, that unlimited range does a lot to protect them. I will say just a quick, this is a little bit of a tangent, but a quick tip for if you're running sniper teams is make sure you're corner peeking and you're keeping one of your two models for each sniper team out of line of sight. That prevents you from getting nuked by like a one pip bombardment, Veers's or Leia's, because they can only wound what they can see. So they'll only remove one model. And then because of how the unit leader casualty removal works with sniper teams, the two-man teams, you know, essentially you'll pick up the sniper that they just killed, and then you'll replace your remaining model with the sniper. So it prevents them from being nuked in one shot by one of those command cards, and then you can use the unlimited range, you know, for the rest of the game to protect that one model.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. And you know, the few rebels that I've played recently that have had sniper teams, you know, they put them up high on that terrain, but by doing that, they're not necessarily giving them the best cover, and so they're kind of leaving them open, even though they've got view of the battlefield.
Yeah, and if you if you're in some great vantage point above the battlefield, that means you can see everything, but that also means that everything can see you. So
exactly.
You know, Leia calls in an X-wing or something and just blasts him off the top of that nice tall tower, and suddenly you're down 44 points and a sniper team, and you're like, huh, okay, well they did have a really good view of everything.
Yeah, well, and I think this goes for all units, and I'm pretty sure it was you who said it, but like, whatever you think is going to happen, you need to just expect that, you know, the worst is going to happen here, and you need to prepare for that. And so I think, you know, across the board, all your units should be taking advantage of cover wherever possible, you know, and really focus on getting them in cover.
Yeah, cover is really important. You know, it's that static one or two hits off the top benefit. And in general, you know, you mentioned basically just expecting the worst. That goes down to risk management, which is, you know, I talk about that in my intro article, but it's a key component of any game with a luck component. Essentially, you want to make sure that if a particular goal or objective is really important to you, you know, you want to determine like what your average outcome is going to be, and then throw twice as many things at it as you think you need. Because at some point, you know, those dice are going to go cold on you, and you're going to fail to do the thing that you really needed to do if you don't build in redundancies and have a backup plan. And then, you know, if you roll average and you threw two units at something and you only needed one, then you've suddenly got an extra unit to do some bonus objective with. But I think it's always better to focus on, you know, a few very specific goals, specific and important goals per turn. And then if you can do extra stuff because you roll hot, you know, that's a good bonus, but you shouldn't necessarily expect that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. So, you know, my next question is for you, what so far has been the most rewarding thing that's come from this blog?
I think it's just been like getting to know other members of the community. You know, we have a great, Legion community here between, you know, the various bloggers and the podcasts and the Legion Discord. And I think it's just been talking to other folks in the community and meeting more people and sort of trying to build that foundation for, you know, not just locally, but in general, build a foundation for Legion to grow as a game. I feel like the growth of the game sort of stagnated between like the Leia Fleet Troopers release and then the Han Commandos release, just because it was a good 4 months without any new units. And I can say just anecdotally, like at my local store, there were guys that were all into Legion in March, April, and then Kill Team came out and there was nothing new for Legion for months. And they were like, well, I guess I'm going to do this instead. And I think now we're in a good spot where FFG's realized that they need to, you know, actually have things in stock for the game to grow. So they're getting stuff out. I think, again, they're prioritizing Legion. And I think we'll see some growth here in the next few months. But it's been good to sort of get to know other members of the Legion community and meet the people that also have a passion for this game. And it gives me confidence that it's got a good, you know, as far as people are concerned, a good foundation of people to grow a little bit.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, if guys like you keep writing these great blogs, that when the next two factions come out, you know, I think we're going to see a huge bump in player base, and we'll already have all this great content leading into it, and we'll have the community established, you know, so that when all this new stuff starts coming out, we'll be ready for it, and we'll see a huge influx, you know. That's what I believe anyways.
Yeah, I'm going to have to like recruit somebody else for something, because right now I can, I got a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old, and right now I can barely manage like one article a week. I don't know what I'm going to do once we have four factions.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what we were talking about the other day, is that, you know, when this stuff comes out, we're absolutely not going to be suffering for new content at all.
Yep.
But yeah, so talking about that with the new factions, for you and the blog, what are your thoughts for the future? Where do you see this going for you? You know, moving forward.
Yeah. So I think right now I'm just trying to think a few months at a time. You know, I'm thinking just for the site, I'm trying to do about one article a week just to catch up on units. And luckily, luckily or unluckily, depending on how you look at it, luckily from my perspective, FFG is only releasing one or two units a month. So, I should be caught up eventually to the point where, you know, when they come out with something, I can throw an article out about it immediately. But as far as just my personal like Legion playing, you know, I'm going to see how Invader League goes. But me and four other guys locally here from Nova all got Adepticon invites, and we actually we made a Legion team. We're calling it Nova Troopers, which is not very creative, but easy to remember. And we're all going to go to Adepticon together, sort of as a team, and see if we can kind of build like the local Northern Virginia Legion community that way.
Yeah, that's really awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, man. This has been really great, and I really enjoyed it.
Sure, of course. You ever want to, you know, talk Legion, I'm always game for that.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah, so that was really exciting to talk to Kyle and get his perspective on everything. You know, Kyle, we talked about it a little bit in the interview. Kyle came in second place at the Nova Open. He got an invite to Adepticon, which he's really excited about, and he's also playing in the Tabletop Simulator League as well, which is really cool. And you know, we're gonna keep quoting Kyle. His numbers are crazy good.
His numbers establish a great baseline when you're building your army, to know what you want to do and where.
Yeah, and he has that Excel spreadsheet tool, and we talked about it in the interview as well. I highly recommend everybody go to his website and download that thing. It takes a little time for the macros to work on it, so you know, make sure you build yourself time. Don't do it last minute, but you put in your troops and all the dice they're rolling and how many you have, and it pumps out all the numbers for you, so you'll have, mathematically speaking, you know, what you should be rolling, what kind of hits, wounds, and everything you'll be getting, so... All right, cool. Well, that's it for us today. As always, you can find us on podcast.thefifthtrooper.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Fifth Trooper, and also on YouTube. You know, go take a look. You can see our beautiful faces on YouTube. And also, don't forget about the giveaway. And thank you so much for listening.
Take it easy, everybody.
Join us next week for another edition of the Fifth Trooper Podcast.